Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
What do 8 bags of concrete mix, a cooler full of 30-pound sea bass, and a 10-inch compound miter saw have in common? They're all things that are easier to load in and out of the bed of the new F-150, thanks to its new available Pro-Access tailgate that's also a swing gate. The new 2024 Ford F-150, tough this smart, can only be called F-150.
Available starting early 2024, Pro-Access tailgate available starting spring 2024, cargo and load capacity limited by weight and weight distribution.
Hi, welcome to the NASCAR NBC podcast. I'm your host, Nate Ryan, joined today by Dale Jarrett, NASCAR Hall of Famer. Appropriate DJ because we're coming off the All-Star race at, I think, what many would consider NASCAR's return to a Hall of Fame type track. North Wilkesboro Speedway returns to NASCAR for the first time since its final cup race in 1996, hosts the All-Star race this past weekend. Big weekend, obviously. You had Cup Series All-Star race, you had the truck race, you had late model racing going on, and by all accounts, it just seemed like a huge revival of this racetrack. I wasn't there. I wasn't at another iconic track. I was at Indianapolis Motor Speedway for Indy 500 qualifying. I know you weren't there, but you were watching from afar. You guys did Motor Mouth this morning, so I know that you talked to people who were there, and Jeff Burton and Kyle Petty. Burton said it was a lot of happy at North Wilkesboro Speedway, a revival of racing, as he put it. What did you see from afar, and what did you make about NASCAR going back to that place?
Yeah. Obviously, there was tremendous amount of hype leading up to it, but yeah, I think it lived up to the hype. I mean, it was a huge event, and that's basically, especially this day and time, that's what you're looking for. Events that make a difference. And that's what people want to be a part of. And it's what they want to see. And I don't care. I don't even know the number of tickets that were sold. Don't care how many fans there really were in the stands there. You know, I'm sure it was something over 25,000, probably closer to 30, somewhere in there. All I know is it was jam-packed and you couldn't have put another person in there. And that's appealing to the eye. And so I know that NASCAR had to be thrilled. Certainly Marcus Smith and his people had to be thrilled with what they saw. That goes a long way in the fans telling us, you know, what they really want and look for in events to happen. Most compelling race? No. But how many can we go back over the years of the Winston, the All-Star races? Kyle Petty made this point on our Motor Mouth show, and that how many races were all that great? Yeah, we had some crashes at the end, people battling and things like that. But yesterday was just more about one driver showing his superiority over others in difficult situations. And the difficult situation was just a worn-out racing surface. I mean, you talk 27 years. I mean, basically, the thing sitting there and weathering. And heck, I don't remember a ton about 96 race. Matter of fact, until somebody sent me a picture, I didn't even realize I'd finished third because I never thought that I did very well there. But I can always remember that it never had any grip. And so I know it didn't sit there for 27 years and gain any grip. So it was a huge challenge for the drivers and the teams, especially with these cars that are showing to be a handful on the short tracks anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you'd expect a track, like you said, that's been sitting there for 27 years with virtually no activity. They've had a couple of races, but not a lot for a long time. There were just weeds growing through it. And that's pavement that goes all the way back to 1981 was the last time they repaved it. And Marcus Smith, chairman of Speedway Motorsports that owns the track, of course, said that he intends to bring Cup back there in some form or fashion, but they're trying to hold off on repaving it. So I found that interesting. But, you know, you brought up, you didn't have the most illustrious record at Wilkesboro. I looked it up before we started. 19 starts, and you said it. Your career best was a third in that final race, that final Cup points race maybe not the final cup points race there ever, but the most recent one they had in 96. So when you heard they were going back there, were you happy about it? Obviously, it's got a great kind of reputation of being a throwback old school place, but you didn't have a lot of success there. I mean, what were your initial reactions or impressions about going back to a place maybe where you weren't as good, but you know, NASCAR kind of thrived?
Yeah, I had to put my thoughts aside. You know, it wasn't that I didn't like it. It was different, and I never really found a great feel for it. You know, fortunately, you know, Todd Barrett came along and got me something that I could drive around there. He knew apparently more about what I was looking for than I knew over those years. So it was nice to get one good run out of the way. And anytime you finish behind Jeff Gordon and Dale Earnhardt on a short track, you're not too upset with that. So that was good. But when it was announced, I thought it was a great idea. I did not know what type of racing we may see. That was a concern. But again, it became more about the event. And that's what, you know, any all-star event, I don't care if you're talking Major League Baseball, NBA, hockey, NFL's gone in a totally different direction with their basically all-star game, their Pro Bowl. So it's more about everything that goes on around it. And if you happen to get an exciting race in our world out of it, then that's just a bonus. And that's certainly what this weekend was going to be more about. These cars are difficult enough on tracks that these people know. And so, you know, the majority of the guys in the race until they got there and practiced on Friday and some ran in the truck race on Saturday, and, you know, had never been there and competed in a race at North Wilkesboro. So to throw them out there and expect and think that we might have this three wide exciting finish at the end, a little unrealistic, but it's a great venue. I like going back and celebrating the history of this sport because, you know, our country's gotten to where we don't want to celebrate too much what has happened in our past. But this, I like to see our sport being able to do that because, you know, North Wilkesboro was a big part of why this sport continued to grow through the 80s and 90s until we quit racing there. So it was great to see that. And the fan support was just unbelievable. And I know talking to Kyle and Jeff Burton there, a good vibe and a good scene to be a part of. I had friends that were there that were telling me, you know, what a cool experience that it was. So I think it was a huge success. Will we see a race there, a points race? I don't see why not. You know, that's no reason. I do think, now I'm going to say that if I need to call Marcus Smith and say, put some pavement and some asphalt down there, let's go ahead. I don't care if he puts concrete down. Whatever the surface just needs to be redone. And I think that we will see better racing then.
Yeah, again, I wasn't there, so I didn't have a chance to talk to a lot of drivers, DJ. But I know that I think Dale Jr. is his kind of lobby for the same, that they would both like to keep that surface the same. Take me through like pros and cons, like what would be the pros for keeping a surface that's been there for 40 plus years the same? And I know that drivers like worn pavement and tire management, but it sounds like what you're saying, like at some point you have to put down something new.
Yeah, I think that you, in my opinion, you've had your event there now. So if you're wanting to lobby for a race, I just think that it needs some pavement. And I realize that I didn't like that as a driver either, that newness of it. But they seem to be willing to do enough events that you could make it to where whatever surface you put down there was able to get enough time on it to get it a little bit worn. And if you do that, then it's not just going to be a one groove. But yesterday was pretty much a one groove track in itself anyway. If you got out of the very bottom and Kyle Larson took the bottom to a whole new level when he started using the concrete apron, especially off of turn four to his advantage. So, you know, I think you would still have people searching around and looking for that opportunity to do that. I wouldn't even be opposed if you took the racetrack and made it a variable banking going up in the corners. You still have your uphill and downhill sides of the track to where it's downhill going into turn one, uphill towards turn three. So I think that you have that is enough of a difference. But, you know, even putting, I'm not saying it needs more banking, but if you just add a little bit as you go up, then you might see the racetrack spread out a little bit and it might make for somewhat of better racing. So that would be my thoughts. I understand the worn out surface, and it brings out all the skills. But sometimes you find out that one or two people have way more skills at certain type of tracks and surfaces like that than others do.
Yeah, certainly we saw the skills of one driver in particular, and I want to get to Kyle Larson at some point. I mean, I think that was a cool part of this, DJ, that an all-star race should be about the superstars. And to me, yeah, Kyle Larson right now is the quintessential can drive anything, anywhere superstar of NASCAR. So I think it was fitting he won this race. I think, as you mentioned, people should check out Motor Mouse. I think KP said it really well as to what the all-star race is about. It doesn't, unfortunately, always produce the greatest racing. And I, you know, is that format? Is it because they change it all the time? I don't know. Maybe it's just a function of it's just its own entity. But I think KP made a really good point that the idea is a celebration of NASCAR, a celebration of the sport, yeah, which, you know, we have an NBC sports executive who always stresses the importance of big events. This was a big event. And you made a good point there, I thought, DJ, about how Wilkesboro had been a part of NASCAR's rise. And I think that was why there was such atmosphere, such scenes surrounding this. I mean, it opened in 1947, same year as Martinsville, but unfortunately kind of got left aside as NASCAR made its big rise in the 90s. I'm curious if you can take me back to 96, that final season at Wilkesboro, maybe in that final race. Like, what was the vibe then? I mean, we know the vibe this past weekend was, and past week was terrific there, but what was the vibe like when it was reaching the end of its run in 96? And was there any hesitation for drivers? Was there any like, hey, we shouldn't be doing this? What was the vibe back then in NASCAR?
Yeah, I think at that time, you know, there were a number of tracks that were starting to be built. There were a lot of tracks that in other parts of the country that this was an opportunity for us to expand NASCAR into some markets that we weren't, where we didn't have tracks. So let's have tracks and events. I think that we were buying into that because we did see this huge rise, and it was fun to be a part of the sport right at that time. We certainly understood history was a big part of our sport, but it seemed that we had enough of those tracks at that particular time that we could continue to run at, that losing North Wilkesboro, not that we wanted it to happen, but if it needed to happen to further expand and to help our sport grow, to get away from that quote unquote so-called, you know, Southern sport, and that's all that it was, then this was a step that we needed to take. I remember there still being a huge crowd there. You know, we took a picture out at the start finish line. It was something that we always wanted to remember, it just in case nothing ever happened there again, or we didn't have cup racing back there. So I think that everyone knew that it was going to be a change. We were hoping and buying into the fact that the change that we were looking at were going to be bigger and better for the sport. So it was a big picture event to look at and happening. But without that happening, We couldn't have happened what happened yesterday in 2023, you know, 27 years later. It became a huge part of our sport once again. And I just really hope that, you know, there's an opportunity there for more racing, because I really think that short tracks to me are, you know, it's obviously where this sport started. It needs to continue in that direction. I understand that, you know, the big rage over the last few years has been let's add another road course. Now we're adding a street course with Chicago coming up. New things are good. And this was actually something new, but short track racing is fun if it's done in the right way. And I think there's a place for an event, a regular season event to happen at Wilkesboro.
Yeah, it certainly seems like short tracks are where things are headed. I think you're right. We were on the road course tip for a few years now there, and now it does seem like it's progressing in this direction with Fontana possibly being changed over. And just to contextualize what you were saying earlier, I think this is kind of fascinating to think about. Like, yeah, when Wilkesboro closed, the next year, Fontana and Texas opened up. Then you had Vegas the year after that in 98, and then Homestead in 99. A few years later, you had Kansas and Chicagoland in 2001. So you're talking like a half dozen intermediate tracks all opening up within 5 years of Wilkesboro closing. And now here we are 27 years later, Wilkesboro is reopened. And some of those tracks have either lost races or in, you know, Fontana's case, they're being changed over. A lot of talk about what's going to happen to Texas. Can you wrap your head around all that and like how much things have changed? Because I'm sure in 96, you never thought that NASCAR would be going back in that direction and leaving, well, not really leaving, but certainly downsizing its presence in some of the bigger markets to go back to its roots.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's something that, you know, I applaud NASCAR and Marcus Smith, who with their company, they have always been forward thinking and looking, you know, and thinking about what's best for the sport. And things do change. What the fans want changes. I'm not saying that anyone was happy when we were leaving North Wilkesboro in 1996, that was the end of it. But I think a lot of people understood about it. The race fans and that area did not want to lose it, because everywhere that we go, it's a huge economic factor and boost for the economy in that part of the country, wherever that is. And so you didn't want to see them struggle, having no idea that it might just completely shut down. You would have thought that maybe, you know, somewhere along the way there would still have been an opportunity to have lower series and things like that racing there and continue to have it. You know, the people that, you know, Speedway Motorsports saw that might not be the case. It's what they wanted to do. Their monies were going elsewhere. But now, again, these things change and what people are looking for and where they find the excitement in the racing, even though, you know, there again, I'm going to put aside the racing side of it that happened there last night, because I think that can be remedied in a number of ways that we can see more exciting racing there if that opportunity is given. But, you know, you have to be willing and ready and able to change because, you know, at the time in the mid late 90s, it was all about, we were running these tracks. Every stand that we had, every seat was filled pretty much at every racetrack we were going to, whatever was built. That's how many people came there, that seats were available. And so it was a great time. And so why not build bigger and better places? And, you know, speed was something that everybody wanted to talk about too. You know, here, you know, our stock cars were 200 miles per hour. And you know, that's a number that everybody likes to hear, because, you know, that separates you from a lot of other things and shorter tracks and things. So you talk about speed for a while. You know, now it's, again, it's about the event and the competition. And I think that's what, you know, why the Coliseum has been successful for a couple of years now for the Clash. It's not a great venue for stock cars to actually race on, but it has been entertaining. And you know, the fan support has been good. So let's not just say that we can't go back somewhere or take a 2-mile track at Fontana and change it into a shorter track, because there's no doubt that over a span of 10 races, if you're going to have at a 2-mile track versus a 3/4-mile track, which I think is something that's kind of the area they're talking about in Fontana, that in a 10-race span, you're going to have more exciting races out of that 3/4-mile track than you are at a 2-mile track over a period of time. So I think fans are, you know, that's what they want to see. Not saying they want to see crash and all of that, but you're going to see more excitement most of the time from the short tracks.
I want to touch on the racing, because I think they do want more compelling racing on the short tracks in general. And this is one instance in which I think it's, yes, the racing was just disappointing at North Wilkesboro, but it wasn't an anomaly, unfortunately. I mean, I had you on the podcast last month, DJ, and we were talking after Martinsville, where there were a lot of driver complaints about how the car raced at Martinsville. I think we heard a similar refrain after Richmond. And even going back to last year, certainly there's been a lot of talks about how does NASCAR optimize the next gen for short track racing. So I feel like we covered a lot of this ground already last month after Martinsville, but let's just touch on it again, because short track package, I know you said no shifting, maybe bump up the horsepower, maybe tweak the tires. After watching Wilkesboro, do you feel like that's still the direction NASCAR should be looking at?
Yeah, I think that those are still the areas that NASCAR has to take a look at, because I don't, you know, one thing that I've said that makes this car difficult, I don't care what short track you go to, whether it's dirt, asphalt, concrete, across the United States, every one of the cars that you'll walk through the pit area at those racetracks are offset. So that's taking and moving to where you have more weight on the left side of the car. You know, the right side tires are going to be out further than the left, to where the car will corner better, drive better, and then when it drives a little bit better like that, then you can put on a better show. And that's every series across the country. I don't know anybody that runs straight up cars on a short track anywhere. And so You know, we had that before the next gen car, and we had great short track racing to speak of for the most part. And I'm going to throw in something besides what we talked about that you could look at with the no shifting and the more horsepower, which puts it in the driver's hands. I think Goodyear certainly has to get involved with the tires in helping these drivers be able to put on a better show. But there's one thing that Ryan Newman told me, and he used a phrase at Darlington when I was talking to him as he got back into the car and into this particular car for the first time. I said, Ryan, I said, so getting into this car the first time, how does it drive? And he looked for a second and he said, straight. And so then I was confused. And then he started to explain what the car was about, the suspension, the independent rear suspension, which had never been on a stock car in NASCAR before. You know, it's made to go straight. And you have to do things to make it not do that. So obviously the majority, well, all races, whether it's a road course or the ovals, you have to make the car turn. And we're talking about short tracks here. So to do that, then you have to have the driver to have the ability to withstand what you have to do to make this car. You don't ever really see them rotate, but you see them turn. Some turn better than others and are hung out. And the drivers that can do that are the ones that are going to win more races. Kyle Larson proved that last night, that the guys would have had a better chance of beating Kyle Larson if that would have actually been on a dirt track last night instead of on that slick asphalt. You know, he's just so good at being able to move around and find a grip and making his car rotate and do the things that need to do. So I think that that's something that NASCAR has to look at, is what is it that we can do without completely changing the car? Because I know they want to keep the cars as similar as they possibly can. You know, that was the whole idea of this next gen car. But what can we do to help this short track racing in some other ways? And that would be figure out something from the, and the drivers and these smart engineers that are on every one of these teams can tell you how to do things that would help everybody. Otherwise, we're just going to have a few short track winners along the way, I believe.
So the goal would be to kind of get the car to rotate more? Yeah.
Yeah.
More. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Without having to make the car so loose that only a few drivers. And so when it gets so loose, you get so loose into the corner, you can't make a charge and try to make a pass to the inside of someone on the exit if you can't get in the gas. And we saw at times, I think it was through the open maybe last night, that they were showing some of the throttle. And guys weren't even getting, when they got the tires worn in that race, they weren't even 60, 70% of throttle all the way down the straightaway because they just couldn't get in the gas. So trying to figure out how to make them rotate. And it was interesting in talking to Ryan Newman, I had watched practice at Darlington and noticing that you didn't see the cup cars rotating. So that was what I saw on Saturday while I was there. Then I watched the Xfinity race, which are the old style cars. And you could actually watch, physically see those cars take a set and rotate. And that's the drivers that had the better cars and eventually were up front and winning the race.
Interesting. Well, certainly no driver was better at it last night than, of course, Kyle Larson wins the All-Star race again. And I think there was a stat, DJ, during the race where Mike Joyce said something effective that North Wilkesboro marked close to 200 tracks that Kyle Larson has raced at in his career. Obviously, yeah. A lot of those are dirt. So I don't know how much of that would translate. But to your point, like, I'm sure it helps him in some ways. And I heard you and Burton and KP talking about this earlier on Motormouth, that the key to Larson's success last night at Wilkesboro was he found that sweet spot off turn four where you could get down on the flat with all four of his tires on the concrete and just kind of do that straight shot into four, where he was almost like, just instead of arcing it, you know, we're used to seeing Larson go up by the wall and just rim ride. He was just cutting almost across the grass into four. Can you analyze that? Your driver perspective, is that kind of what you saw with Larson?
Yeah, sure did. And you know, there are a couple of things here. This young man is so talented. And when you go and you have events like this, in case you forget how good he is, it reminds you just how good he is. And I think he's probably the best at adapting to changing racetracks. whether that's dirt. And I know that his dirt background has helped him be able to do this, because that's what you have to do on dirt. I remember my dad telling me that, that when he raced all the way back in the 60s, you had to be willing to adapt and change your line. And we have tracks that you have to do that in NASCAR. Matter of fact, in the Coke 600 this weekend, they're going to have to adapt to changing conditions, because you start in the daylight, it's going to be a hot, slick racetrack, and then your fastest laps of the night are going to be those last 150 miles of the race when the track is cooled down the most. So a lot of changing conditions there. But what Kyle Larson did, and the other thing that was interesting, was him talking about that he spent no time in the simulator seeing what North Wilkesboro was about, even though he had never been there. He was going to run the truck race. He relies on his skills and his feel of the car and truck to get the job done. If you go back and watch the truck race, that's something down on that concrete part of the racetrack coming off of turn four to be able to drive straight and in the gas more than anyone else through that entire weekend. That's where he made his time. He found that. He was able to make his car do that. And others, once they saw what he was doing, they couldn't make their cars do that and do it as well. And one time in the telecast tonight, Fox did a great job of what they call their ghost car, really, and they showed Larson versus Bubba Wallace. And Bubba actually beat him for three quarters of that racetrack. He was ahead of Kyle Larson on the particular lap that they were showing. And Larson was actually about a half car length behind him whenever they got to that portion of the track. And when Larson powered up and went to the start finish line, then Larson was a full car length ahead. Wow. So from that point, he was a car length and a half better than the second place car, Bubba Wallace. And that's how much he was beating them every single time just in one portion of the track. So you have to admire his ability to be able to do that when Bubba Wallace ran a great race. And he beat everybody else there. But he beat a man that's just more talented than most that we've seen come through this sport.
Yeah, he's got that unfair advantage, certainly behind the wheel, and certainly will be a favorite going into the Coca-Cola 600. You mentioned it, DJ. This is Memorial Day weekend coming up. Huge weekend. We got the Indy 500 on NBC on Sunday, May 28th. Of course, after that, we've got the Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte Motor Speedway. You won this race in 1996, and I heard you tell this fascinating story earlier on Motor Mouth, so I'll let you retell it, that after, 400 laps, 600 miles, 4-plus hours, you were this close to not winning the Coca-Cola 600, but yeah, luck fell on you.
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes you have to be really good to win races, and sometimes you have to be really good and really, really lucky. And, this was 96, our first year of the 88 car. We had been lucky already to this point. We'd won the Daytona 500. I actually think we won the Clash that year also at Daytona. So things were going really, really well. We put ourselves in a position with this win at the Coke 600 to go race for $1 million at Darlington later that year. And we had finished second at Talladega that year. So we could have won the first three and got the $1 million check. But anyhow, the Coke 600 that night, I think we started 5:30, 5:45. We had at least two rain delays, if my memory is correct. I'm pretty sure that when I took the checkered flag, it was somewhere around 12:45 a.m. in the morning, and it had been a long night, and I had a great car, did everything that I wanted it to do. We beat the field, and Dale Earnhardt would finish second to me, and you beat him there in 600 miles. You've done something, and we beat him pretty handily. Something that I found out after I'd been to the media center and my car had been through inspection, Doug Yates called me over, and he said, "I don't know if you want to see this, but this is what we have with our car, and just glad that it wasn't 601 miles because we probably wouldn't have won that race." And so in 1996, you had a pulley on the front and a bolt that went through that turned the dry sump pump, which pumped the oil from the oil tank and through the engine and back through. This bolt broke somewhere on the last lap or in my cool down lap. Because it wasn't started up again, only for me to get there. So somewhere along that way, we don't know exactly where it was, but that bolt was broke. So I wasn't going to make much more than a lap before the engine was going to expire because I was going to have no oil pressure. And so, I'm glad that I had the checkered flag. I had the trophy in hand before I ever saw that. But it just shows you that, you know, the parts and pieces are basically made to go a certain amount of time. We were very, very, very lucky. So, you know, that's the only 600 I ever won. So I was even more lucky looking back on it, since I never won another one, that I was able to get to the finish line. And Dale Earnhardt did find out about that the next week, and he was not happy. He said, you know, to have a car that good and to be that lucky is not fair in one night.
All right, that was definitely my next question, was knowing that Earnhardt finished second, if he had found out.
Did you poke
the bear at all? Did you say, hey, man, this close?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I told him, I said, I was so far ahead, I could have probably coasted around anyway and beat you for another lap. He didn't take that very kindly.
I love it. I love the old stories, and I love honoring the history of NASCAR, and we're going to do that this weekend as well with the Coke 600. DJ, you're going to be one of the grand marshals of this race with Jeff Burton, with Kyle Petty from NASCAR and NBC, and also Bobby Labonte. And I know that's not the first time, a big 75th anniversary special year for NASCAR. You've been a part of these ceremonies really throughout the season. What's it like being a part, you know, being a dignitary like that for this race? And what's it been like this year, kind of being so invested in this 75th celebration?
Well, let me say this, that I'm honored to be a part of it once again. And this 75th year has been extremely special to this point. The one thing that makes me realize, especially when you get multiple opportunities, that you're really, really old, and I'm okay with that. You know, as long as I'm still able to play golf and get out and then come to the races and have fun too, I'm good with everything. But yeah, so I was a part of the Daytona 500, being a grand marshal there, and then drove the pace car at Darlington, and all a part of the 75th anniversary celebration there just a couple of weeks ago. That was so much fun. And I have to say that extremely honored by Coca-Cola. I've had a relationship and partnership with Coca-Cola basically started in 1997. Then in 1998, we had the Coca-Cola racing family of drivers to begin at that point in time. So Kyle Petty, Jeff Burton, Bobby Labonte, and myself were a part of that. So this is a 25-year celebration for that now. And looking back, we had a lot of fun making commercials, just having different events. Coke did things in a different way. And so, you know, they brought the four of us back together. The great thing is, you know, we're going to be grand marshals at a race and you know, give the command here at a race that we all won. Pretty cool to think about, you know, NASCAR's longest race. And we were all able to go to victory lane at Charlotte. So pretty cool. We, you know, it's a difficult race to win. As I just pointed out, sometimes you have to be lucky to do it. And I think Burton actually did it twice, and Bobby might have done it a couple of times, but he was always good there. And so it's going to be a fun weekend. Looking forward to this. And again, it's such a tremendous motorsports day. When you talk about, you know, Formula One, the Indianapolis 500, and then the Coke 600 capping everything off.
Yeah, it is really cool day. And you're right, really cool, DJ, that all you guys have won this race, especially given your relationship with Coke as well. And I agree with you. Like, I think sometimes that gets overlooked, the amount of marketing and promotion. I remember, you know, we talk a lot about the UPS commercials, but Coca-Cola did some pretty cool commercials with all of you guys back then, the late 90s, early 2000s, that were definitely memorable. So let's talk race preview real quick. Coke 600, I'm sure it starts and ends with Larson and Hendrick. But I know the Gibbs cars have been strong recently on the mile and a half. Toyota's shown some strength there. How do you see this playing out over 4+ hours? And, you know, like you said, totally different track from the beginning in daylight to the end at night when you're running your fastest laps. I'm sure you're exhausted 4 hours in the race. Like, who do you like Sunday night at Charlotte Motor Speedway?
Yeah, you know, as good as the Toyotas have become, and they have, and, you know, now you throw into the mix when you talk about all of those, you know, Ty Gibbs is starting to really show that he's ready to drive these cars, learning more about him putting himself in a position. So it's not just his teammates that you're talking about with Christopher Bell and Martin Truex Jr. and Denny Hamlin, who are accomplished and winners in the Cup Series. You know, you're adding another young driver, and certainly Tyler Reddick and Bubba Wallace, and in particular Bubba Wallace. We know that he's capable of winning on mile and a half track, as he did at Kansas last year. So you have to put him into the mix. So the Toyotas are going to be heard from. I just still believe that the Chevrolets, and in particular Hendrick Motorsports, have an advantage. Their cars are outstanding, but their driver talent, William Byron is doing just a phenomenal job. Chase Elliott, I think, is now seems to me getting better and better each week. You know, you can't just sit out and go back in and expect a driver to start winning immediately. But what I'm seeing with Chase is he's getting more comfortable with the cars and the changes that were made while he was having to be on the sidelines and watch this. So I just expect that you have to beat Hendrick Motorsports. I think Trackhouse can possibly do that, especially with Ross Chastain. He's finding himself in the mix in a lot of ways this last month or so. But Larson is still the man to beat. He is just, you know, this is going back to his championship year, what I'm seeing. They didn't show this last year with this new car, but I think this, once again, it was about adapting and giving Kyle Larson just what he needs. And they're starting, Cliff Daniels and his team are figuring that out and realizing what they have. So if you're going to win on Sunday night through 600 miles, it's a grueling time. I don't care what car you're driving and, you know, what the tires are. Obviously, Goodyear does a great job with that. You have to be physically ready. Larson is that. I think all the racing he does helps him with that. And if you're going to win, you're going to have to figure out a way to beat that five car this weekend.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, if not for misfortune and Ross Chastain, Kyle Larson probably could have five or six victories already this season. Yeah. He's been in championship form. I hate to put you on the spot, but we've got 107th Indy 500, 11 a.m. Eastern on NBC on Sunday. Peacock coverage starts at 9 a.m. Eastern and runs all the way through. I hate to put you on the spot, but any picks for the 107th Indy 500 winner?
You know, gosh, that's so hard. You know, when you look at that, the series is so competitive. I mean, you know, between the veterans that they have there and the new young drivers that they have that are coming along and making themselves known. Something is telling me, and I don't know which young driver it's going to be. So I don't know that I can give you. Scott Dixon is always a driver that comes to my mind that if you're going to win that race, you have to be him. I think he does just a fantastic job there in putting himself in position. But something tells me we're going to see a new young winner at that race. And I'm not sure which one it is at this point in time, but I think we're going to see a little bit of surprise. And I know experience pays off a lot, but these young drivers have the equipment and the talent to get it done, and they'll find themselves in the right position there. So I'm anxious to watch and see if that's the case, and probably be like my fantasy lineup that I have no idea NASCAR exactly what I'm talking about most of the time. But I think it's going to be a highly entertaining race.
Yeah, I think it will be too. And usually you know what you're talking about. And I agree with you. Like, I think it is going to be a young driver. You've got Alex Palou on pole for Ganassi. Pato O'Ward is starting in the first three rows. And I certainly would be looking at either of those guys probably as my picks. So we shall see Sunday. And we'll also look forward to seeing you as well at Charlotte Motor Speedway. DJ, we loved having you at the Indy 500 last year, but great to see you being honored with Burton and KP at Charlotte. And always great to have you on the NASCAR and NBC podcast. Thanks for being here, Dale.
Absolutely. Thank you, Nate.
We appreciate Dale Jarrett for joining us on the NASCAR and NBC podcast. Thanks to Motorsports Manager Emily Convoy for coordinating this episode, and Zach Tanzaretti for some show notes and the final edit too for the Motorsports on NBC YouTube page. You can check out the podcast there, as well as more NASCAR America Motor Mouths content. You heard me mention that with DJ. He was on with Burton and Kyle Petty, talking North Wilkesboro, talking Coca-Cola 600. You definitely want to check that out. Motorsports on NBC YouTube page. You always can find more news, columns, and analysis on NASCAR Talk and Motorsports Talk on NBCSports.com. Please visit NBCSports.com/NASCAR or NBCSports.com/motors. And especially this week, it's the 107th running of the Indianapolis 500, and it will be broadcast on NBC and Peacock. Coverage will get started Sunday, May 28th at 9 a.m. Eastern, exclusively on Peacock, and it'll be on NBC and Peacock starting at 11 a.m. Eastern. Green flag around 12:45 p.m. Eastern, again this Sunday, May 28th, on Peacock and NBC. And all of the content you need, stories, interviews, lineups, start times, some big features I've been working on and will roll out this week, it will all be on Motorsports Talk on NBCSports.com/motors. Again, that's NBCSports.com/motors for all of your Indianapolis 500 online coverage. If you have any NASCAR and NBC podcast feedback, you can send me on Twitter at Nate Ryan is my handle. Thanks again for listening to the NASCAR and NBC podcast.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.